Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of Beyond the Romance. This is the drama recap episode, Dramas with Carrie, and I think this is episode 5. There has been a break since the last recap episode. I've been doing a lot of coverage for film festivals. I had Fantasia Fest, I had the New York Asian Film Festival, and then I had the Toronto International Film Festival. But I wasn't completely inactive with regards to Beyond the Romance. I did do one of my special episodes where I recap, where I go through a particular drama, and the last one was Goblin, otherwise known as Guardian, the Lonely and Great God. That one was recorded with my friend Ray, who I also did a recap like a few months ago before with Tale of the Nine-Tailed. And as you know, if you're a fan of Goblin, you know that stars Gong Yoo, Kim Go-eun, and Lee Dong-wook, who was also in Tale of the Nine-Tailed. So we had a lot of fun discussing Goblin, which is one of my all-time favorite Korean dramas ever. Is one of my favorite Asian dramas. I just love it. The OST is amazing. The acting is so good. The storyline is heartbreaking, inspiring, it's loving, it's funny. The bromance between Reaper and Goblin is hilarious. I just love Lee Dong-wook and Gong Yoo's relationship. I wish they were in more dramas together or had more films together. I want to see them do another comedy bromance kind of situation. And the fashion, the cinematography in that drama is amazing. We discussed all of that in the episode, so you can go and find it in the Beyond the Romance playlist on my YouTube channel, And if you're on listening on podcasts, you should be able to find the podcast episode on multiple podcast streaming platforms on Beyond the Romance. And you can also find it on butwhythepodcast.com. And I'm going to, this episode, as I said before, is going to be a recap episode. So that's when we're going to go through the dramas that I'm currently watching and some that I recently completed. And I'm not going to go through all because it's way too much. And I hope you enjoy this. So the first drama I'm going to discuss is Hometown Cha-Cha-Cha. That one is a rom-com. It's not super dramatic. I love it. It's really funny. It's very endearing. It stars Shin Min-ah as Yoon Hye-jin. She's a dentist who moved from Seoul into a small fishing village to open up her own dental practice after being kind of almost excommunicated from the dental community in Seoul. And then it also stars Kim Sun-ho as Hong Doo-sik. He is kind of like a jack of all trades. He does everything in this fishing village. He's a carpenter, an electrician, a cook. He like, you know, he does all the small and big tasks they need, everything for a fee. You have to pay him, which I'm not mad at. I'm like, dude, make them pay you for all your labor. And then there is Lee Sang-yi, who plays as Ji Sung-yun, and he is a PD, a producing PD for a food variety show. So like when I saw his character, I'm like, I hope he's a PD for a food variety show, because one of my favorite Korean variety shows is Three Meals a Day, which, as if you're a fan of Korean variety shows, you know, was created by Na PD. And I just love it. I love Three Meals a Day. And it was just like, I know, like, they're not going to show foods and all that stuff and like the way they do for like in like food center dramas like Chocolate or, you know, like food variety programs. But it was just like so tickled. I'm like, I hope his character is kind of based on PD Na, because I just think that's amazing. Then there's like the townspeople of Gongjin, which is the fishing village, is Pyo Min-sun, who's played by Gong Min-jung, who is Hye-jin's best friend and also her assistant at her dental practice. And like there's a whole bunch of other people in the village. There's Kim Young-uk, who plays Kim Gam-ri. She's like an old lady. Like there's these three old ladies and they're hilarious. They're also kind of pushy too. I'll get into that a bit. And Lee Ma-yi, played by Lee Young-yi, and Park Soo-ja, played by Shin Shin-ae. And like this fishing village is like, if you've lived in a small village, even though this is set in South Korea, it does operate a little bit, I think, like a lot of the small villages that I know from like Bahome, Barbados, where everyone knows like quite a bit about everyone growing up in the village, especially if you were raised there as a child. The old people know everything about you and about your family history. And it is very much like that. And it's basically a slice of life kind of drama. And I liked it. It's not without its problems though. Like I'll talk a bit about that, because I'm not going to do like a whole full thing, because you know I have to get through other dramas. But one of the things I don't like about this drama is how Hye-jin is made to compromise and give in on things that I think she shouldn't have to. Like, for instance, when she first moved to the village, like she would exercise and she'd wear just like, you know, like regular jogging leggings and like a crop top or like a spandex like sports bra. But like she was still like modestly covered to me, because I'm like, she's not running around like skimpy tiny shorts and like a skimpy tiny sports bra. She's like modestly covered. But then like the old ladies, they're making comments about her body and saying, oh, she's exposing too much of her body and she's like being, she's like not dressed conservatively enough. I'm like, excuse me, this is 2021. Get with the times. Like, move on. But then Dushik, like, he goes to Hyejin and tells her, oh, like, you're making the old ladies uncomfortable, so you need to cover up your body more. And she's upset at this, and he's basically made her feel guilty about dressing the way she dresses and dressing for her comfort. And he's like, oh, you're in a small fishing village. I'm like, what does that have to do with anything? She's running alone by herself, and these women just happen to see her, and they're making a big deal about her. Like, this is literally the only time also in the show, there's very few scenes where she's running, where she runs into anyone. So like, she, because of this one situation, she's made to cover up her body to appease these women. And then there's other situations, like for instance, where she was going to Seoul for a wedding, and Dushik, he invites these women along to like for Hyejin to take them. Like, he's like, oh, like he can drive that. He could have found a truck, he could have found a van or some, or borrowed a car to take these women to Seoul to like go visit their children or whatever. But no, he foisted himself upon her and made her feel guilty about not taking these women first, and made her get to the wedding late. They were inconsiderate, had her pulling over like multiple times, because you know, small bladders, incontinence, that's not their fault. But this was something she didn't plan on. Like, she didn't plan on the extra stoppage time. She didn't plan on having to stop over to buy like food for these women. She didn't plan to have to, like, when she's in Seoul, to stop at these different locations to drop these women off and to take Dushik where he's going. Like, I thought that was extremely inconsiderate. And again, she's made to feel guilty about this, and it happens multiple times in the show. And I think I'm up to episode 12 now, and it's happened. Like, they gossip about her, and he tells her, oh, and like the thing is like, one of the characters, like, she lost her daughter, and so the way for her to cope for losing her daughter is to gossip about people. Excuse me, that's nonsense. Like, gossiping about someone is not a coping mechanism. Get counseling, get therapy. You're suffering from grief and depression, get therapy. Gossiping about people, spreading lies and rumors is not harmless. And that's exactly what Dushik is like. Dushik is like, oh, it's harmless, this is how she goes. No, inexcusable. And Heijin says this. She's like, I don't like people gossiping about me. I don't like them spreading rumors about me and you. We're not in a real romantic relationship. And they're saying we are. And like, because like, he slept over at her house one night, because, no, she slept over his house one night because, like, you know, they were out and they got drunk, so she stayed over. And like, they were insinuating, like, you know, they were in like a romantic relationship or like, you know, having sex. And like, she's like, I don't like that. And he's just like, oh, well, you know, that's how she copes. No, inexcusable. And it happens again and again and again. And that's one of my biggest problems of the show. Like, Heejin is not treated fairly as a character, and she's the main character. And then, like, I'm supposed to like find her relationship with Dushik romantic when they start do finally getting close. I'm supposed to find that cute? No, I don't, because I can't. Like, what is romantic about being in a relationship with someone who doesn't consider your feelings? What's romantic about someone who puts others' well-beings and their rights above you, who are supposed to be their love interest? What, like, who? Why would I want to be in a relationship with someone who doesn't consider my feelings to be important enough, or to validate my feelings? Like, I'm like, no. And then here comes Song Yeon, as I said, played by Lee Sang Yi. I actually prefer him because he is Heejin's sunbae. So like, they went to the same college, and he is a producing director for a food variety show. And he comes into town, and I love his character. He's funny, he's endearing, he's like careful. Like, he's kind of like Dushik in the same way. Like, they're both like very conscientious, and they're very considerate of people. But the difference between him and Dushik is Song Yeon puts Heejin's feelings above anyone else's. If he sees her, says she doesn't like something, he listens to her. And I'm like, right now, this is strong second lead syndrome is alive and well for me, because like, right now, Dushik, he has his own trauma. Yes, he, like, spoiler, like his trauma, because it's a K-drama, like the leads usually always have some kind of trauma. Is that his parents died when he was young, then his grandfather who raised him died young, and then it hasn't been revealed yet, but it hasn't been explicitly revealed yet, I should say, but we're getting the sense that his past love, the person he was with after he left college and before he enlisted, because there's a 5-year gap, that was, he was in a relationship, and that person died, and like he has this belief that he, like anyone he loves, is destined to die. Spoiler alert, Dushik, everyone is gonna die. Everyone around you that you love is gonna die because death is inevitable. You're going to die. So does that mean that the people that love you are like cursed? But I understand where he's coming from because this is something he believed from when he was a child. So I get that. But that does not excuse his behavior towards Kajin. That does not excuse him making her compromise and push her feelings aside. That does not excuse him making her feel bad for things that she's right about. And as I said, I prefer Sonyeon because I he's nice and he listens to Kajin. He considers her feelings. And I'm hoping that as the show progresses, that Dushik realizes the way he treats Kajin really isn't that good. Like, yeah, doing small things for her around the house, yeah, because you're the handyman, that's expected. That's your job. But other than that, like, he really doesn't treat her that nice to me. So I hope that the writer, like, as the show progresses, the writing for her gets better. Because I have him, like, as soon as I watch these kind of shows, I'm like, does the writer even like their main character? Especially if they're women. Like, do you even like this character? Like, why are you doing this? And then there's a whole thing where, like, Dushik and Heejin had like a faded, they're like faded lovers because they met as children, which we know is a common trope in Asian drama, not only South Korean, but it's a trope in like all dramas. And as my friend Ray kind of said, it's probably a connection or a whole a homage to the Red String of Fate, which I get. And sometimes I don't mind it, but I don't need it to happen in every romantic drama. Like, all of our leads don't have to have like a past where they interacted as children. They didn't have to be like, like had this this encounter where they had this amazing day as kids and then they lost touch and they meet up and say, "Oh my God, I love you now because I knew you back then." Like, no, I love you now because of who you are now. It shouldn't have to have anything to do with you running into this person when you were a child and you had this magical encounter as kids. But apart from that, I do actually like the show. It's funny and it's lighthearted. And I have been watching a ton of depressing dramas or very heavy or very thriller dramas a lot this year. And one of them is the one I'm going to discuss next. So the next drama is Squid Game. And Squid Game, as I'm recording this right now, is right now the most popular TV show being discussed, not only in North America, but internationally. It has swept social media, especially Twitter. It has taken everyone's like Twitter feeds by storm. Like every time you're seeing someone is making a reference to it, there's like tons of memes now. Everyone is thirsting after Gong Yoo, my bae. And like, which is great. I love the fact that a South Korean drama is getting all of this hype. I just hope that that also expands to not only Squid Game, but and also the South Korean dramas. But I hope it expands to other Asian dramas because I'm always telling people, South Korea is not the only country making amazing work, okay? Making amazing productions. Japan has amazing productions. Taiwan has amazing productions. They're extremely well-written shows all over Asia, Southeast Asia, South Asia. Like, give all of those dramas a chance. People, don't only just focus on South Korea because that's what's trending. Don't only focus on South Korea because this is the only reference point you have. No, please. And don't only stay on Netflix. Watch on Viki. There's other platforms. There's Viki. There's like WeTV if you want to watch shows from Taiwan and China and mainland China and Hong Kong. Like there's other there's each there's Ichi. I think I'm pronouncing it right. It's IQUIQYI. There's like other streaming platforms. And while I'm talking about it, Netflix also does not have the best translation when it comes to not only South Korean but like Latin American productions. Like I know friends who speak flat Spanish, and when they watch shows with English subtitles, like I do, I don't really listen to dub unless I have to. I usually listen to the original language for a language international. Sorry, I listen to the original language with English subtitles, and I sometimes like my friends say like they watch and then like the translation is nothing like what the person is saying, and that's not on this on the person doing the closed captioning. That's not on them. That's on the person writing the scripts and the person like translating. Because like the thing is like some people say, oh, it's not that big a deal. It kind of is because there's a lot of context that can be missed with regards to like the characters and their purpose as characters, and then the plots and certain plot elements are missed because like translations aren't accurate. And for that, I usually tell people actually go to Viki, because even though Viki is subbed by volunteers who I believe deserve so much credit, like thank you to everyone who subs for Viki. I love the work you do because what they do is they offer context to words and phrases. I'll give you an example for, and I'll get into more in some in Squid Game, but I just feel like I need to talk about this. Is, for instance, when you're watching a drama on Netflix, whether it's in Korean or Japanese or China, like, you know, in a lot of Asian languages, there are honorifics with regards to the way you refer to someone. So like South Korea, an older brother or an older brother, an older man who you are close to is referred to as a hyung. That is if you are the person speaking is male. So for a male is hyung, and if it's a female is oppa. And then if it's a person in a position of seniority, it's a sunbin, sunbinim, which is the respectful way of saying, you say sunbinim if the person is not, if you're not that close to the person, or just sunbae if you are kind of close to them. Or, you know, as a female speaking, an older female is nuna, you know, they're on. And then like with China in Mandarin, like there's like levels of honorifics with regards to like family members and family. So, but you have like Guga is older sister, and then younger sister is like Mei Mei. So like when you're watching Asian dramas or whatever, you're hearing it in the language, if you're listening in their original language, of course, but the translation has the name. And to some people that may seem like an innocuous thing, and it's like not big a deal because like they're writing for a North American audience. But the thing is like they're not only doing subtitles for a North American audience, you're doing subtitles for an international audience. So like this is in English. I'm not sure how they do it for in other languages, but I think it's important that you do have cultural context, because when you're watching international films and shows, I think it's important like to know what they're saying, because it helps us appreciate the fact that these people are speaking a different language, and that they're in a different language, and you have to respect that and honor that. Because when I growing up in the Caribbean, like in the Caribbean, we don't refer to superiors by their first name unless you've been working somewhere really for years or you're very close to them. Like it took me when at my jobs, I would only refer to my bosses by their first name if I've been working with them really, really long and I'm close to them. If not, it would be Mr. Harris, Mr. Lyle, you know, when my teachers. It took me years to call my teachers who, like, even after I left secondary school, by their first name. Like, there was a teacher, like, for 6-7 years after I left secondary school, I would call her Miss Smith. I couldn't call her, I just could not call her by her first name. And it took me like 6-7 years after I left secondary school to start doing that. And I understand that. That's as one of the things I tell people, like, I think for a lot of like Black cultures, especially Black West Indian and the diaspora, like we have a lot of similarities with Asian cultures, and that's with regards to respecting people in seniority, like our elders. And so like for me, when I watch dramas translated on Netflix, I'm like, this person is not saying the correct honorific, because like this, you're kind of like downplaying the level of respect that they have for these people culturally, and I think that's important. Whereas in Vicky, like the suburbs would put like the word hyung, and they would give context and say hyung is a term used for it's a respectful term used for a person of that's older than you, or sunbae is a person, as you know, and like going up on level with regards to seniority. And I appreciate that about Vicky, because like you get the word spelled, it's romanized of course in the original language, but you're also getting cultural context and cultural meaning, which I think is important if you're going to be watching these dramas. Because yeah, you can watch it for entertainment, but I think it's important to learn about the culture too. And that's just my mild rant about that. Squid Game. So as I said at the beginning, it is the most talked about drama, Korean drama, being discussed right now across social media. And it was written and directed by Hwang Dong-yuk. And if you're not familiar with his name, he's done a few dramas and films. Like one of the ones that I really know really well is Silence. And this is a film based on a true story. And that film is one of the most emotionally exhausting and heartbreaking films I've ever watched. Like that film had me in tears. And so when I started Squid Game, I'm like, I know I'm gonna have like emotions. And he did make me cry, but not for the reasons I was expecting. And so Squid Games it's not dystopian. It's also people call it dystopian. I'm like, it's not dystopian. It's set in the modern day. Well, and then if you think about it, a lot of shit that's going on, excuse my language, sorry. A lot of things that are going on right now could be considered dystopic. And it's about capitalism, people. Yes, it's not just about capitalism. It's about greed amongst the middle and lower class of society. It's about people being exploited by the upper class. It's about people being exploited by the rich and the extremely wealthy. It's about people of color being exploited by white people. Spoilers. Well, if you're familiar with this, you know I'm going to spoilers. So, and And it kind of also reveals social inequalities and I think professional inequalities in a very specific way, which I don't think a lot of people have picked up on. And it's something I've discussed in, I did a Twitter Spaces the night before while I'm recording this, and I kind of mentioned it. But before I get into that, so it's about these group of people, 465 participants, who were basically coerced into taking part in this game, where if they take part and if they win, they could win this massive amount of money to eradicate all of their debt that they have. And these are things, these are people that have like probably like 60, 70,000 and below amount of debt. And they're being told you can win. I can't remember the exact amount, but it's equivalent to, so it's like 465 participants. So it's about 465 million. One, I don't think is even, I'm wrong. So 465 billion won. And that's a lot of money. And so, but, and then, like, one of the, like, some of the participants are, like, the lead, Lee Jung Jae, who plays as Song Kyun, who is player 465. So he's the last person to join. And then there's Park Hae Soo, who plays Cho Sang Woo. There is Oh Young Soo, who plays Oh Nam, Jung Ho Yeon, who plays Kang Se Bok, who plays Kang Se Byuk, Ho Sang Tae, who plays as Jung Dok Soo, Kim Ju Rung, who plays Han Ni Young, and Tripathi Anupam, who plays Ali Abdul. I love Ali. Like, he is my favorite character out of the whole show. I'm gonna get into him a bit more because I love his character for like so many reasons. But the whole premise is, as I said, it's about these 465 participants who are basically coerced into taking part into this game. But it's not a regular game. It's like the best way I always describe it to people, if so they get an idea of the concept, is like if you took Battle Royale or Alice in Wonderland and mashed them up, set them into this contained universe, this world. I just have people like play these childhood games to win this money. But the catch is they have to sign their lives away. They have these three rules that they have to abide by to play these games. But the thing is the one of the rules is, and I remember I tweeted this, I said, where it says, oh, you have to, like, if you don't win, you're eliminated. And I was like, and this is before I even knew exactly what was going to happen in the show. It was like, exactly what does eliminate mean? Like, someone, I'd be like, you need to explain exactly what the word eliminate means in this context. Because then, lo and behold, I was right. My misgivings, and I had managed to avoid spoilers before I watched the show, because I watched it at when it was released. I watched it like the day after it was released. So I'm not like one of those people who only started watching it after all the hype. I started watching it before the hype. So I wasn't spoiled at all. And I was like, yeah, eliminate death. People die. And the thing is with this show, like how you get coerced into it is like Gong Yoo, which I think is such an amazing bit of stunt casting. So as I mentioned, Silence. So Silence stars Gong Yoo as the lead character in that film, and like he worked with the director before, so he has this cameo. So he's basically the person that indoctrinates these people into playing this game. Like he finds them, so they know who the people are that are in that. You can tell that the people who organize this game have been watching these people because they know who to approach. And he goes and like they play this game, the slap game, where it's like, I can't remember the exact terminology for it in Hangul, but it's like where you have these little squares and you have to like one person throws down and like when it bounces up, like whichever side is coming out determines who's the winner. So like one side has the fold and the other side is flat. So the one that, depending on how you play, if your fold is up and the opponent's side is down, you win. But if you lose, you get a slap from him. And I think it's such a bit amazing bit of stunt casting, because casting Gong Yoo to play this, like he's extremely handsome, he's clean cut, he's suave, he's like, he's hot as hell. You see this hot man saying, like, I can help you win hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, he has that winning smile. Like, people are willing to listen to him because he like, this man is handsome. He's in his expensive suit. There's no way that what he's doing is wrong. So, like, I thought it was genius casting. And so, like, they get these characters in, and, like, it's chaos from the beginning. Death. And the first game is red light, green light, one, like, you know, if you, it's just one light, green light, but back home, we call it red light, green light, one, two, three. And you know how you play that game. And so, like, the thing is, like, when you stop moving, you know, like, the person at the wall, if they turn and see you, like, you're out. If you're even if you move like your body, you're out. In this one, you're not just out, you're dead. Because it's like this statue of a doll, this giant doll, which I believe is also from a someone had it in their backyard in Jeju Island, in Jeju-do. And like the props to the props department, the production team, they're like, this is creepy and amazing. We're gonna have it in our show. And like this thing turns on and begins like shooting people and mowing people down, and that's how the show begins, just like death and mayhem. And like they're playing all of these childhood games, and I think it's such an amazing concept to have things that's supposed to invoke sense of nostalgia as a sense of as a weapon, you know. And I'm gonna do a special episode about this for Beyond the Romance, but so I'm not gonna get all into the show. I think that's amazing because it doesn't make references a lot to a lot of like pivotal moments in South Korean history, like the 1988 Seoul Olympics. But it's really good. But the show, I think, does a good job of talking about capitalism, but I think it's not specific enough, because a lot of people are, when people think of capitalism, I'm gonna regard, say, especially North Korean, because there's so many North Koreans talking, North Americans, sorry. So many North Americans are talking about it. They're talking about it from a very specific sense where they're talking about capitalism, and they're playing North American understanding of capitalism. But if you're familiar with the way like South Korean dramas and even Asian dramas talk about capitalism, first and first, this is not the first time, and it's not the only time. This is a common element of a lot of writing for these types of shows in South Korean Asia. Like I saw people, there are people are making comparisons to Parasite. I'm like, this is nothing like Parasite. One being capitalism, and these shows are not capitalism that are being discussed in North America. Because when people think capitalism, they think, oh, the government, they think like huge, massive conglomerates, you know, like people want working to earn money to reach this level, like, you know, spending money to reach to obtain. Well, this isn't about that. This is about exploitation, not only of poor people by rich people, but it's exploitation of poor people by other poor people. Like if you just have our oomph, like you think you're better than everyone. It's about class structure. It's about gender structure. It's about how women treat each other in situations of strife. Like, are you going to band together? Or are you going to turn against each other and like glob onto men? It's about how women, some women see men as being stronger, so they think that they have a better chance of surviving when in really and truly they don't really need men. You know, it's about, you know, it's about camaraderie. It's about racism. It talks a lot. It talks about racism. I think it talks also about the immigrant situation, which, but it is not, these things are not exactly, I think, delved into as deep as they could have gone with the show. Like, for instance, when I talk about immigration, I talk about the character of Ali, played by Anupam Tripathi, and he's Indian, but his character is Pakistani, who's a Pakistani immigrant in South Korea, and like his character dies, broke my heart. But we never really get to know much about Ali. We get to know he has a wife, we get to know he has a child, but like it's never, once he died, we don't learn what happens to his family afterwards. And I think that was kind of unfair, because we did get to see what happened to a few other characters. There's another character, Kang Sang-byuk, where we got to see what happened to her brother. I'm like, Ali has a whole, like the audience cared about Ali. We want to be rooted for Ali. So I wanted to know more about him and about his experience. We got to, like, you know, so I'm not saying the show is perfect. Like there's a lot of things I think that could have been done a bit better with regards to writing elements of the characters. Like for instance, Kang Sang-byuk, she's a North Korean defector. So that needed a bit more exploring in the show. We get like hints of it because of dialogue between Doksu and Minyo. Like they make a lot of derogatory comments about her being North Korean. And like you get that kind of like, you get like the references to the history of North and South Korea, but like it's never really gotten into. And the thing is with a show like this, which is getting such big is such big discussion on social media, people aren't going into these elements. I've seen reviews and like they're all basically saying the same thing. It's a show about capitalism. It's a show about inequality and socialism. But I'm like, is anyone going to talk about the fact that this show is referencing in 1988 Seoul Olympics and how that affected like the progression of South Korea to becoming one of the most technologically advanced countries in the world? Is it going to talk about how the North and South Korea are still very much trying to, they're still like, and this uneasy tension, like there's talks about, you know, like reunification and stuff. Like, is anyone gonna mention these things? And I'm not only talking about Asian writers can say this, but like I pitched and my pitch was ignored. But these things can be gotten into in the show. And I'm like, if you're gonna talk about it, at least explore these things. No one is talking about it. People are talking about Gong Yoo, and he's so hot. No one is talking about this man's acting career. He's an amazing actor. He's an amazing filmography. No, people just talk about how he is in a Calvin Klein ad. And I love Gong Yoo. I'm like, I think he's hot too, but I'm like, he's more than just his looks. Like, he's a fantastic actor. He's not the only one. Like, it stars like Lee Byung-hun, one of the most notable South Korean crossovers, because he's done a few crossovers into North American productions. He was in Red 2. And like, no one is talking about him. No one is talking about Wee Ha-joon. I'm like, that's a discussion for another day when you talk about how North Americans fetishize and like to really, like, focus on specific things because they can't be bothered to learn about anyone else, especially if it's from people of color. But that's a different discussion. So that was my mini sort of rant recap. I'm so sorry. Of Squid Game. But it's six episodes. No, I'm sorry. It's eight episodes. It's on Netflix. Watch it. If you are, but I will give caution. If you're uncomfortable with extreme violence, if you're uncomfortable with suicide, if you're uncomfortable with if you're photosensitive, I would caution episode four. There's about a 4 minute section of episode four that if you're photosensitive, I would say skip right through. I had to because I'm photosensitive and strobe lighting gives me headaches. That makes me feel nauseous. So I had to skip right past. And also, if you have an allergy to extremely horrendous acting, skip episode seven. But not really, because I think the set design in episode seven is actually one of the best in the entire series. Like, the show has amazing set production. Like, applause, kudos to the set designers and the crew and who made the sets, because they did such a fantastic job with the show. Sets the episode seven is one of the best sets in the entire series. It's just spoiled and wasted by these horrendous actors. They're white, they're American, and like, whoo. And this is where I'm talking when I say, like, I think the show also unintentionally reveals social and class inequalities in real life, because the fact is you have these horrendous actors who, by the way, I've seen in other Korean dramas, have been doing this for a while, and they're still extremely bad, and they're being cast against these amazing actors like Wee Ha-joon, and we have an entire episode dedicated to them, and they're horrendous, they're bad. But then you have to think about, you have these like skilled Asian actors working with these men, and like, it shows in the inequality, because you can darn god bet that's not going to happen in a European or a North American production where you have like such bad actors working with sucks working with experienced, like, trained actors. Like, it shows such an inequality. I'm not sure that was an intention of the director, but that's what I picked up, and it actually turned me off for the entire episode, and it kind of spoiled the rest of the show for me, which luckily was only one more episode because it's only just eight episodes. But I was just like, I need Korean act directors, stop casting these white people for the sake of white people, for having white people. It takes you out of the ex It takes you out of the show, it takes you out of the film, because it happened in Train to Busan. I've seen it happen in other films. No, I think it's unfair to the ex to the to the act to the professional actors to do this, and I think it's unfair to the audience. I have to sit through watching these horrible performances, and it just reminds me, oh yeah, I'm watching something fake. I can't buy into this reality anymore because these men are just bad. Just stop it. I would recommend watching it, and then also try to like do some research for it, and also go back and like, when I do my special episode for Squid Game, please watch. But that's it for Squid Game. Remember, that one's on Netflix. It's only an episode, so you can push through. I binge watched it in 2 days because I had some work that I was doing for my coverage for TIFF, so I kind of had to break it up into 2 days. But it's totally bingeable, and as but yeah, that's it. Show number three is Yumi Cells, and this one is such a, I love this drama. It's so lighthearted, it's funny, it's endearing, and I'm so happy that I started watching it. This one is on Viki, and I'm so happy I started watching it, mainly because I've been watching so many dark dramas. One, as I mentioned previously, was Squid Game, and I started Yumi Cells like the day after I finished Squid Game, and I'm so happy that I did, because I needed something light that I don't have any problems with, and it's just so good. So this is directed by Lee Sang-yeop, and it's adapted from the webcomic by Song Jae-jung and Kim Yoon-ju and Kim Dong-ran. And it's and from my understanding, the webcomic had a 5 year run, so it ran from 2015 to 2020, and it then is now being adapted into drama, starring Kim Go-eun from Goblin as Kim Yoo-mi, the lead character, and Ahn Bok-young as Go-woong. It's so funny. So you have the real life and then you have the animated life. So it's, as I say, it's you mean cells, and when they say cells, they mean literally. So it's basically this animated world showing Yumi cells as these little characters, and they're all like parts of her personality and parts of what makes Yumi Yumi. So there's like the different cells. One is sensitivity, one is hunger, one is naughty for her naughty thoughts. I love naughty and hunger. I think they're my favorite. They're my favorite cells. There's anger, there's frustration, there's nervousness. And I think that's such a great way. And we also get it for Gowoon. Like we get for both Yumi and we get for Gowoon's cells. And what I love about these cells is like they're all individually animated. So they all look different and they all have their own personalities. And the thing what I love about this is that, as I said, they all represent a specific emotion for Yumi. But then these individual cells have their own specific, they have their own emotion. Like they all get angry, they all get nervous, they all get worried, like they all get. No, I think the only thing we haven't seen them get is hungry, except for hunger. So hunger is only a cell that gets hungry. But all of them have like the same emotions that Yumi has. So just because one is, for instance, the sad cell, that cell isn't constantly sad. It can be upset. Like there may be a somberness about her. The personality might be dour and whatever. But they also get angry. It gets nervous. Like nervous is like their main personality is nervous, but they also get upset, they get angry, they get scared. And I love that. And I wish they made dolls. I hope they make some kind of merch for these. I would buy the merch for Yumi cells. And I K-dramas don't I don't not that I know of. Maybe in South Korea they probably do. If anyone watching this, if you know where I can order merch for dramas, please let me know. I would love the umbrella from Tale of the Nine Tails, and I would love some dolls or like a t-shirt for Yumi cells. And the thing is with like as getting into more of it, so Yumi, she's I'm not sure exactly how old she is. I'll say she's about 29. So she is like learning to fall in love again. Like her heart at the beginning, like her heart was broken and she shut off her heart for 3 years. And now she's finally thinking about starting a relationship with Gowoon. And Gowoon is like unlike anyone in her life. So like she works in a corporate world, so everyone around her is her work colleague. And Gong, he's a game developer, he's a game designer, and like he's relaxed, he wears t-shirts and shorts and slippers to dates, and but he's so sweet, and he's awkward, and he tells these like awkward jokes, but he's also, I love his personality and the fact that he may seem like a pushover, but he's not. And like he stands up for Yumi, because there's this character called Ruby, played by Yubi. Ruby, I hope she gets a lot of development going forward, but right now she's kind of annoying in the fact that she's one of those young women who thinks that women over a certain age, anyone over 25 is old, and like should only be with like an old person. Like if they're getting a relationship, they shouldn't be with a young person or seeing with someone their age, because like you're old. Like no, that's like not nice, Ruby. Like you shouldn't think like that. And she does aegyo a lot. And she does aegyo because she thinks that's what makes her attractive to men, and that's her way of like endearing herself to men, And like Ruby, I hope she grows as a character, but right now I can't stand her. And like as I mentioned, Gowoon, like he's not a pushover, and what he does is like when he interacts with Ruby and he sees the way how she dismisses Yumi, he puts Ruby in her place. He's like, I'm not here for you. I'm here for Yumi. I'm like you're interrupting. Step aside, which I love. I love that he does that. And then there's another character, Chaeyoung, played by Minho, my boo from EXO-A. His character is so good. Like we've only seen him in the first two episodes, but his character actually gave me a surprise. I was not expecting this. So, as I said, this is gonna be spoilers. He's gay. Oh my gosh! And the reason this actually excites me is that he's not the first gay character that we've seen in a Korean drama or any Asian drama. For goodness sakes, there's a whole subgenre of and called the male love dramas, and they're becoming more and more popular. One of which I will, which will be the last show that I discuss, Tasty Florida. But I think it's so important to have not only a character who is gay, who has said that they like men, because like he revealed to Yumi that he likes men and he has a crush on someone. And the reason he revealed that to her because Yumi has had a crush on him, and she thought that when he was inviting her out to like lunch and spend the day was because he was interested in her. But no, it was actually to introduce her to Gowoon. But he revealed to her that he likes men, that he's gay. And so, but he's not completely out of the closet, because like no one at work knows this. But I think it's so important to have a character that is played by someone like Minho, who is one of the most popular K-pop artists in South Korea. And like you have him say this, it's not inferred, and it's like, you know, because sometimes with dramas, like, it's inferred, like, they don't explicitly say that they're gay. One of the few times I can recall that happening was in Be Melodramatic, which is a drama I absolutely love, and, like, there's a character who is openly gay in it, and he has a relationship with someone, but I'm hoping, like, he wasn't in the last episode I saw because his character went on a business trip, which I'm guessing is because of Minho's actual real life schedule as a performer. But I'm hoping that develops. We get to see him and Yubi become closer as friends, and because she's one of the few people who knows that he's gay now, and like, I want him to have a friendship where he's more comfortable with regards to talking about that with her. And like, we get to see him actually in a relationship with the person that he has a crush on. I'm suspecting I know who it is, but I'm not sure. I think it's Goon's friend, the person that he works with at their game company. We'll see, but I was just so excited, and I got emotional because I'm like, oh my gosh, we have a character admitting that they're gay on in a Korean drama, and I'm like, that's amazing. Because I think it's a huge step for representation for LGBTQ characters in Korean dramas and in real life. So I'm not LGBTQ, I'm not a member of the community, I'm like, I'm heterosexual, but that's not a thing to like super admit, but I just wanted to say I'm not a part of the community, but I'm like, I just so glad to see this representation on screen, and I think it's such a big deal, and I'm looking forward to see where Yumi Seo goes. I'm gonna actually start the webtoon because I want to do a special episode Beyond the Romance for Yumi Seo, and if I'm gonna do that, I think I need to have more context of the show, and not just the show, so I want to have the context of the web drama, so I'm going to start reading that, and I have 5 years to catch up on. Oh my gosh. So wish me luck. But again, that one is on Viki. You can watch it. It's colorful. The cells are hilarious. I love the voice casting for the cells. The animation is funny. It's like, when I say animation is funny, like the design is actually funny. It just like makes you want to laugh, and like they're so sweet. And there's a scene with Goon's love cell, and it made me get emotional because like his love cell, like the thing with this show is like the cells can interact with each other. So like Goon's cells can interact with Yumi's cells. No, we don't need to explain that. Like it's an animated, it's like this part's animated, like roll with it. But he got into her village disguised as a frog because the Yumi likes frogs, and it's a reference to a date they went on, and he went and he cleaned up her village, and her village was decimated by this sub, I think it was called Hysterius, which is a cell that's like angry and is like creating like destroying everything because it thinks it thinks Yumi needs to be protected from being hurt, so like destroyed the village where the cells live. And like Goon's love cell went and he cleaned it up, and he like swept up, and he like helped, he tended to the hurt cells, he like cleaned up the village, I was like, oh my god, that's so sweet. And it made me get emotional. But I would recommend this drama to anyone. It's so, so good. So my next drama is, as I said, is The Tasty Florida. So this one is a part of the, what I call the middle of dramas. I personally don't prefer BL. It's a middle of drama and it's new. So this one is, it's about this young man, Sohan Won, played by Cha Woo-min, who moves to Seoul from his small town. And he moves into this guest house with a restaurant above called the Flora Bangor. So he moves into this guest house with a restaurant above called the Florida Banjum. And this is a Chinese restaurant, so they sell like Chinese dishes, and it's run by these four guys. So two of them are like the owner and the manager, and then there's the two waiters, and they are played by Baek Eun-gyu, played by Kim Yoo-won, Cha Ji-soo, played by Mong Kang-yuk, Ha Jin, played by Zize, and Joo Se-yuk, played by Yoo Sung-jun. And they're all super sweet, they're really nice, and they're all extremely handsome. And so you have this restaurant run by these four hot guys, and like they have a lot of customers because the food is good, but then they also have a lot of customers because they're extremely hot. And so you have these school girls that will go there to just like take pictures of them like they're celebrities. And like so Howan moves there, and like I've only seen the first two episodes, and this one is also found on Viki and on WeTV. And I only saw the first two episodes, and it's so good. And It's what I call a micro drama in the fact that each episode is less than 15 minutes. So like for so far, the ones I've seen, the longest episodes, I think is 11 minutes and 32 seconds. So that's like super short. And so it's just like, but you still somehow like, I think that the pacing is still really good for this type of drama because the director has done such a good, and the editors have done such a job, a good job of giving us enough of the characters that you're getting to know them. And I'm not sure how much episodes this will have. Let me check. So it's only gonna be 8 episodes. Okay, so like we have quite a bit of development to go, and it looks like also there may be a love triangle between three of between Haewon and Tu and Eunkyu and Jisoo. So we'll see how that goes. That would be interesting if like. Because you have the two men who want Haon, because like they're like, oh, he's so cute, he's so sweet, he's endearing, and we'll see how that goes. But I like to promote these dramas because I think they do need more audiences, and they're just a lot of them are just very well done. They're smaller budget, so like it's not like a super expensive sets or anything, and a lot of them are like kind of like web dramas, so they're introduction for young act performers to get into acting, to get into mainstream acting. But like they're still like really good stories, and they're really well written. Like I think one of the best ones is where oh my gosh, one of the best ones is Where Your Eyes Linger. And then there was one that wrapped up recently that was, I can't remember, so forgive me. I will put it in the description box below. But that one was also really good. Also found a Vicky. But I think it's like I think these shows are really good. I do wish to make them longer, like 30 minutes. But then if you the longer the drama is, the longer the production is. And like these, I guess smaller budgets. So smaller budgets means not as long production time. But I'll take what I get because I, as I said, I enjoy them, and I hope they continue to make them because I hope that a lot of them become more mainstream for international audiences. Like, not that this genre is new by any means. It is not, because if you watch Japanese dramas, they've been around for like I think 30 years in Asia, and not just manga, but like in TV shows, because like they're a big part of like Taiwanese and Thai. A lot of them are from Thailand. You can get like a lot of ML dramas in Thailand. Like one of the most well-known ones is Love by Chance, and then there is and then there was what, Two Moons. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on them. Oh my gosh. And it was reading the fanfic the just last night. And then there's like the Chinese ones, but you know they don't call them like BLs or male love dramas. They just call them like, you know, they're just like dramas, but they're about men. Like the most popular one is probably Untamed, and then there's Word of Honor, which I covered, and then there was recently a Republican drama one, Killer and Healer. And there's a few being made now, and there's a few that have come out that I haven't discussed yet. Like one of them is SCIT, SCI Mystery. That one was really good. And Guardian also was an extremely popular one a couple years ago. So like these dramas are by no means new, but we're getting more of them for more Korean, South Korean productions off them. So that one is the Tasty Florida. So I don't really have much to say with this one. As I said, it's new, but I just thought it was interesting. I just thought I should mention it because this one is also lighthearted drama, as it's just sweet. These guys are so cute, and like there's two friendships between Hajin and Soyeok is like super interesting because like the performers are actually best friends in real life, and my friend told me that they actually have a YouTube channel. They used to be in a K-pop group. I cannot remember which K-pop group, but they have a YouTube channel, and like she said, they're super cute on their channel. They do all kind of like fun stuff on their channel, so you can probably go check that out. But that is it for my recaps for today. No, I hope I didn't go too long with this one. Forgive me if I did. As I said, this has been my first one. This is episode 5, so the episode 4 was done I think in August, and then after that I did Goblin. So I will be also taking a break in August for health reasons, but I will have an episode, I will be releasing like episodes periodically that I have re recorded before then. So I will have one for Squid Game that I will release in October, because I'm going to review that before I take my break. And also, you can see my episodes of Carolyn Talks. That's the podcast / YouTube channel where I talk about films with film creators and industry insiders like fellow film critics. And recently, I've done episodes for the Toronto International Film Festival. You can find my discussions about films like Ben, The Electrical Life of The Power of the Dog, both films starring Benedict Cumberbatch. I did a discussion with the primetime programmer of Tith, where we talked about Hellbound, which is an upcoming South Korean drama by Yoon Sang-ho, who is the director of Train to Busan, my all-time favorite movie. We talked about that. I also have a whole bunch of episodes for the AFCA, which is African American Film Critics Association. I did a recent interview with Steve McQueen. And you can find my other podcasts, So Here's What Happened, on the bookbythepodcast.com, as well as the podcast form of So Here's What Happened on Beyond the Room. You can find the podcast form of Beyond the Romance on bookbythepodcast.com as well. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CarrieCNH12, that's CRIECNH12. I will put all the rest of my information where you can find my writing in the description box down below. And the shows that I have mentioned will be in the description box down below. I hope you enjoy this. Please, if you have any suggestions for shows you'd like me to watch or to cover, let me know. Any films you'd like me to discuss, because recently I did one for The Wailing, and I'm hoping to do more of this film discussions for Beyond the Romance. So if there are films that you'd like me to watch, the only thing that I won't watch is anything with extreme body horror. But other than that, I watch all genres. Again, that's it. Thank you so much for watching. If you're a new subscriber, thank you for subscribing. And for anyone who has been following me from the beginning, thank you so much for following me, for watching my videos. Anyone who's left comments, thank you so much for the encouragement. I really hope everyone enjoys these. And again, like and subscribe. I always forget to do that, but I'm going to do it this time. Like and subscribe. And everyone, please stay safe. Bye.